Here's Farron Dogs, the founder and CEO at Harrison Wallace Financial Group. Farron, welcome back. And we turn to you today to just get a little analysis of what the Fed has said and the market's reaction. Where do we start?
Hey, John. Thanks so much for having me. Great to be back. I think we were all expecting the Fed to pause. And I think everyone was more interested in the comments during the press conference and the fact that I think everyone is reading into it that we may only have one or two more increases for the next year. Now, that difference, that's a big difference with some people expecting actually them to start cutting at the end of the year. But overall, the market is clearly taking this as a big positive. We rallied a little bit yesterday. We're rallying big today. And some of that is a little bit of FOMO that I think is happening. I think we have investors who are super cautious about getting into the market with the debt ceiling issues, rising interest rates, inflation. And now all of a sudden they're seeing these indexes going up and up and up. And we are starting to see a lot of money coming off the sidelines and buying in during these periods of time. And there may be some short covering in this too. So I'm not real surprised that they decided to pause. I think they have to understand that we have to wait for some of these lagging indicators to catch up a little bit. And I also think that they feel that they are making an impact on inflation. We've clearly seen it come down significantly year over year. But the PCE is very, it's being pretty sticky. And so we aren't necessarily seeing the consumer inflation necessarily come down quite as much. We're actually seeing people decide to substitute goods, you know, so maybe they aren't shopping at a more expensive grocery store. They're going to a less expensive grocery store. So we are seeing those substitutions happen quite a lot as well. So my expectation, I would expect them to raise in July if they do not get any further data that the economy is cooling at the level that they want. And with retail sales coming out today, much higher than expected, they may take that into consideration as well.
Understood. But did Jerome Powell say something? Because I mean, of course he did. But as I recall, the initial reaction yesterday was that the markets fell a few hundred points on the Dow. And now we're up almost 400. What happened between the announcement and today?
Yeah, I think what a lot of it is the markets, again, are reading into the fact that, well, if it's just one or two more hikes, this isn't so bad. And I think a lot of people, and I think the markets in general, are seeing that this is maybe just one more hike and then more of a permanent pause type of situation.
Right, let me ask you this, then. If that's the case... Mm-hmm. Say that it's only going to go up 25 more basis points total, 50 max.
Sure.
What does that say about the market for the rest of the year? I mean, have we reached lows then? Are we going to, in fact, go back to 38, 39 on the Dow, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a straight up line. I do think it'll be digested and say, okay, we may get, this has not necessarily been a broad base. You know, if we really dig into the indexes, we're not really seeing a broad-based rally. You would maybe get 10% of the S&P 500 that has rallied significantly these first two quarters, and the rest of them have been really quite flat. So I think what it will do is if we do just see a 25 or 50 base increase, we'll see some of those other stocks kind of come back up. But as we know, it's really been, I mean, AI, anything related to AI these days has just gone through the roof, and we've seen quite a bit of recovery in the big tech names. And that's really where a lot of this rally in all the indexes has come from.
So I understand. Farron Dogs, founder, CEO, Harrison Wallace Financial Group. HarrisonWallace.com is his website. Farron, we'll call you again. Thanks for your help today.
All right. Thanks, John. Have a great one.
Bree, welcome back. I hope you're doing well.
Yeah, things are great here. Thanks very much for having me again.
Or is that really Bree? Maybe somebody has taken her voice. What did you think of the fact that Paul McCartney said they've sampled John Lennon's voice and the Beatles are coming out with a new album? I presume you saw a little about that?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was really interesting because, I mean, this is one of, oddly, the lesser creepy things you can do with AI. It's more about isolating different audio on a track, you know, being able to yeah. use AI to filter out the background noise. And, you know, the whole reason they didn't publish this song years ago was because the audio was so bad. And this just basically goes through and cleans it up in a new way.
What about this regulation in Europe? What are they cleaning up there?
Well, this is something that's going to be, you know, debated for a while before it actually becomes real. But the EU on Wednesday took a step towards passing some of the first, you know, real AI legislation and regulation globally. If it eventually becomes law, it would curtail the use of facial recognition and in that kind of software. And also, you know, make makers of AI systems like ChatGPT disclose more about what goes into creating their programs so people have a better idea of what they're dealing with.
We don't have anything like that here in this country?
No, we are way behind Europe on this one, you know, not just us, other countries as well. Europe really has taken the lead when it comes to tech and tech regulation. They passed GDPR years ago, which regulates privacy rights and tech. We have nothing like that still in the United States. This would definitely, if it becomes law, which it's expected to later this year, kind of set an example for the rest of the world that could be used to create laws in other countries as well.
Speaking of appropriating your image or information, what's the status of this Google suit?
Well, they've finally figured out what they're going to do. The settlement was reached a while back, but now there's instructions on how you and I and everyone else can get a little piece of this money. And when I say little, it probably will be very little. But Google, in total, is going to pay $23 million to settle claims that it shared user data without permission. That goes back to a 2010 lawsuit that's finally getting hashed out. But you can file a claim now. They have to be submitted by the end of July. And the amount of money each person gets is going to depend on how many claims are filed, of course. Lawyers in charge of the settlement are estimating it at just under $8 a person at this point.
The last one, was it Meta, was it Facebook, was it Google, was like $100, right?
I don't know about that. I feel like, you know, every time I've gotten a share of a class action, it's definitely been in the single digits, going back to Blockbuster years ago.
We had a story earlier about music that is shared on Twitter and that mm-hmm. there's a copyright issue. Are you up to speed on that story?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a group of 17 music publishers that are suing Twitter, claiming copyright infringement of about 1,700 songs. And they're seeking as much as $250 million in damages because they say Twitter violated copyright law by letting people post music to the platform without permission. You know, the music industry and Twitter have been trying to hash out licensing agreements for a while, and these negotiations have broke down. So this comes after that. The suit is asking for damages of $150,000 for each song, and we're talking 1,700 songs. So that's where the $250 million figure comes from.
Are these popular songs that I would know that we're all sharing and listening to?
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely a lot of pop songs out there. You know, and there's really nothing stopping you or me or anyone else from posting them on social media in general, but it's up to the social media platforms to curtail that, to take down stuff, and make sure that copyrights are respected.
I don't share music on Twitter necessarily. I use Twitter. I read it more than I use it, but mm-hmm. I could post a song to Twitter and then send it to Pete or share it. And that would technically be via a copyright violation?
Yeah, I mean, as it stands, you're only supposed to be able to post small snippets of songs, sampling, just like if you were to use it, you know, on the radio yeah. or anywhere else. Right. It's considered publishing. Twitter's the publisher, so they're the ones who get in trouble for that. YouTube ran into these issues a while back, too, because people certainly post music to YouTube.
You know what this reminds me of? I used to do radio in Minnesota. There was a woman in central Minnesota in a town called Brainerd about 15 years ago. She was sharing music on Kazaa like everybody else was, but the industry said, we're going to crack down on it. They did. They sued her for every single song. And this little lady in Minnesota who was using her computer and sharing songs, $220,000 fine.
Oh, wow. I remember having Napster back in the day, too, which did a lot of the same things.
Sure.
And people run into trouble. People, little old ladies did get sued. And also a lot of people ended up downloading malware to their computers that they thought were songs too. So it caused huge problems on a number of levels. And, you know, it's not surprising that stuff like that happened before, you know, we had things like Apple Music and, you know, all these streaming services that are out there now to just kind of legalize it and give people a way to download music safely.
I told my boy, and you really did, even though you weren't now having hardware, you weren't having albums and CDs, you were still owning songs. You had a digital file of a song that, say, on Apple, you could pay 99 cents for. We don't even do that now, do we? Or does Apple still sell songs at 99 cents a pop on the internet?
You know, I'm not sure. I think so, because, you know, you can buy TV shows, you can buy movies, all of that kind of stuff as well. I mean, I just have my streaming services, and you can save playlists and stream things. And the companies really like that, too, because they're getting your money every month.
Yeah, I know. Okay. I guess, in a way, I almost like my old CDs now. You know, they're kind of permanent. The quality's not bad. I've actually been playing CDs at my house lately, and I don't have to pay anybody for that. Bree Fowler is a senior reporter at CNET. Let's talk again soon, Bree. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
About a year ago, we talked to a lady named Katie Hill, the founder and CEO of a company called Unlisted. The idea was, if you saw a house that you would like to live in someday, maybe you knock on their door before it goes on the market. Maybe they'd want to sell soon, maybe later. Maybe you give them some baked goods to remember you. I think it was something like that. Let me retell some of those stories now as we catch up with Katie a year later. Hi, Katie. You're on WGN again. How are you?
Hi, John. So good to talk to you. Thank you for having me back.
You're out of Ohio. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, I'm a Chicago native originally. I've been in Ohio about 15 years now.
That's my recollection of how your business worked. What did I get right? What did I get wrong?
You got it all right. Yeah, that's exactly it. The idea around the business was starting conversations between neighbors about their property plans, because you know, waiting until the last minute when a house pops up on the market can be stressful for both sides of the transaction. So we like for people to start talking early about, you know, the homes that they like and the homeowners that are in those properties, what their plans are, when they might be ready to move on. And sort of everybody wins when there's more information available to everybody.
So if you surveyed your neighborhood and thought, boy, I'd like to live there someday, should I tell everybody in the neighborhood whose house I might like to buy someday that if they ever sell their house, is that, I mean, you made it sound like I'm going to canvass the neighborhood.
Well, you can. If there's lots of houses that you like, then you'll have a better chance of getting into one that, you know, you're interested in. And that's what I would recommend that you do, is come to unlistedhomes.com and enter the address of those homes that you like. And then what we allow you to do is actually draft a friendly note to the homeowners about why you like that house and, you know, when you might be interested in moving. And then we're going to print those out on beautiful papers. And as you mentioned, stick some cookies or some chocolate bars into an envelope and send that off to that neighbor. And then the really cool thing about it is that in that letter, there's also an invitation code for the homeowner to enter back on our website, which allows them to connect to you and have a conversation in the platform securely and anonymously. So there's no need for strangers to exchange personal information. All of the communication can occur on the platform. So we really like that as far as it sort of being a safe landing spot for people to discuss their plans.
So the sellers don't list their home on your site. They don't do anything, huh? It's just potential buyers?
That's exactly right. Well, they can. We don't call it a listing because we don't have anything to do with a transaction. All we're doing is sparking conversations. But they can register their property on the site, which means that they could indicate that I own this property. they can indicate their timeline to move, like either this is my forever home, so don't bother, you know, just leave me alone, or I'm not ready quite yet, but maybe in a couple of years, say when my youngest graduates from high school, or they can say, if I got an offer tomorrow, I'm ready to go. And then what this allows homeowners to do is to collect interest in their property over time. So you can start to get data points about who's excited about your home and what your home might be worth without simply having to rely upon comp. You'll actually have data specifically about your property, which for many Americans, most Americans, this is our most valuable asset. So really having an understanding of what the value of it might be in the market ahead of the sort of frenzied listing process is hopefully helpful to homeowners and their agents as well. We're not anti-agent. We actually love working with real estate agents in this process.
Katie Hill is the founder of Unlisted. The website is unlistedhomes.com. They recently won, you did win, the Alumni New Venture Challenge at the University of Chicago's Polsky Center for Entrepreneurship and Innovation. I think that was a $40,000 prize for your business. Is that right?
That's correct. And then actually, that was last May. And then this past May, we also just won the flyer pitch competition at the University of Dayton. And that came with $60,000 as well. So we've done pretty well in those kind of Shark Tank environments. They're really fun, and we get to interact with other entrepreneurs and then, yeah, meet some really great judges and bring home some prize money that's really meaningful to a startup like us.
Trying to think, though, the real estate market is so hot right now. It certainly is in, I think it's across the country. It's this in Illinois, where if a house in the Chicago area is attractive and is reasonably priced, they get multiple offers. The ball is so in the seller's court. So does that make your business more attractive, or maybe the potential seller doesn't need a batch of cookies? They've got people knocking their door down anyway.
Yeah, I mean, we're actually finding that we think we're hitting this market at the perfect time with regards to buyers looking for creative solutions to sort of get ahead of the frenziedness that's occurring right now. And another thing about some of the research that we've done on the market is that not everybody who's open to the possibility of selling is necessarily listed, just because that is such a daunting process and people probably have flexibility in their timelines often. So what we like to do is, in those cases where the potential to sell is a little bit softer, having these conversations can help align plans better to help move that process forward. And so we're really kind of trying to get, you know, to gather that information ahead of the process.
Does your scheme here favor a certain price point? Like an expensive home might be the kind of home somebody doesn't want to, you know, put a for sale sign in the yard anyway. Who's your typical client or user?
Yes, very astute. It's something that we didn't know when I talked to you about a year ago, but we're learning now, is that we are skewing luxury. There is an element of privacy to this approach that homeowners of more luxury properties seem to value. So we are seeing that the average home price that we contact has been in the $900,000 range.
Wow.
But the average response that we receive is $1.5 million.
Wait a minute.
So was unexpected.
What's the difference between those two metrics? What do they represent?
So what it's indicating is that the homeowners who are more likely to respond to this kind of inquiry are skewing more expensive.
Yeah.
So even though the average price that we're contacting is around $900,000. The responder is at $1.5 million. So you know, that whole median is way higher than even the average that we're contacting. So therefore, we're seeing that skew.
So I'm trying to think of what that would mean then. So if I were in Hinsdale, Illinois, or Western Springs, yep, that area where there's...
We work with John McKenna Group, Lauren Walls in Western Springs. Yep, exactly.
Okay, so I'm driving around and I see $1 million house. I go, oh, wouldn't it be nice to live there someday? Then I contact you, for $25? You then send them a thing going, if you were ever interested in selling, we know somebody who would be interested in buying, right?
That's right. And either you can do the $25, or we also now have an agent platform. If you have a buyer's agent, then your agent will go on and do it for you, and they'll pay for it. So that's an option as well now.
And that doesn't say anything about, I mean, I have no idea what you would sell it for. You may have no idea what you would sell it for. So that's, even though I've got one on the hook here, we may be thousands of dollars apart, right?
Potentially, but that's why we're working to improve the data in the system. And that's why we encourage homeowners to register, because they can put their value in. And then the buyer's going to put their price point in when they do the search. And then our matching algorithms are getting smarter and smarter about making sure that there's an overlap there. If we see that there's no deal to be had, then we won't recommend it as a possible contact. But in the, so if you love the house and you want that specific house, then you're going to be negotiating against on their terms regardless. But in other cases, if you just put in the criteria, I want a four-bedroom house in Western Springs, then we're going to make recommendations. But if we feel like your price point is way off, then we're not going to make that match. That suggestion to you.
We got to go. We'll catch up again maybe in less time than a year. But so you obviously are working in the Chicago market then, huh?
We are. Yep. We're all over the country now. We're national, but Chicago's been a great market for us. Yep. We're thrilled to be back in my hometown.
Stay in touch. And when you are back this place physically, let's bring in the studio. We'll visit again. Okay.
I love that, Don. Thanks so much.
That's Katie Hill. She's the founder and CEO of this unlisted home selling or matching company. Unlistedhomes.com is the website. We've got more business news now on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. There's a new report about how rising prices have impacted people's stress levels. USA Today analyzed U.S. Census Bureau data that shows 44% of Chicago residents being very stressed financially. Chicago ranks third in the nation behind Atlanta and Boston in the Household Pulse survey. Statewide, the figure was also 44%. People without high school degrees reported the highest level of financial stress. Residents of Mississippi reported the highest levels of that stress. Wisconsin residents were among the least likely to be very stressed. The original Rainbow Cone is coming to the Magnificent Mile. A kiosk location is set to open later this month at Gino's East Pizza at 162 East Superior. The cone, featuring chocolate, strawberry, Palmer House, pistachio, and orange sherbet ice cream, has been a favorite treat of Chicagoans for 97 years. The kiosk is the latest addition as Orange Rainbow Cone expands its footprint. It'll open June 29th. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Thank you. Let's go to the phone. There's a guy who wants to tell some jokes.
Yeah, I'm Dave Foldis.
Okay, Dave, hold on as I thank the Chevy Silverado HD for being our sponsor today. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, the joke teller. Dave Foldis works for Ferrara Candy Company. He is marketing director for Laffy Taffy, which has been printing things to laugh at on its wrappers for decades.
These are one-liners. They're corny, and they're often loved to be told by dads.
Well, those ought to fit right in here at the home of speed jokes. Got any samples, Dave?
Yeah, of course I have samples.
Okay, let's do it.
So where do grapes, strawberries, and peaches hang out?
I don't know.
Jam sessions. Why was the peach late to school?
Why?
It had to take a pit stop. And now, what kind of books do oranges read?
What kind?
Pulp Fiction.
There is a purpose behind this silliness. Laffy Taffy is holding an online contest in honor of Father's Day this weekend to draw attention to a new flavor called Fruit Combos.
Four new flavor combinations for the brand. Strawberry kiwi, strawberry orange, mango passion fruit, and wild berry banana.
And you may be able to win some Laffy Taffy for your dad by telling about some of the dad things that he does.
So the way that this works is that on Father's Day, starting at 1 p.m., families can visit LaffyTaffyCombos.com to enter the giveaway for a chance to send any father figure a free package of our Fruit Combos new product.
The first 1,000 will get the freebie and be registered for a drawing for a grand prize,
which includes a year's supply of Fruit Combos and classic Laffy Taffy dad mementos, such as a lawn chair and a duffel bag and so forth.
LaffyTaffyCombos.com if you want to get in on this for your dad. You know, I think I have time for one more joke, Dave.
I can go on for a while, but I'll give you one more. Why is it hard to work at an apple pie factory?
Why?
They have a high turnover rate.
Laffy Taffy, part of the Ferrara Candy Company that employs about 2,400 people in Illinois. I'm Steve Alexander, and that's The Business of Food on 720 WGN.
June is Pride Month. Let's talk a little bit about what Shake Shack is doing for Pride Month. Matt Meyer is the Regional Director of Operations at Shake Shack. Hey, Matt, you're on WGN. Welcome.
Thanks, John.
How many restaurants do you all have in the Chicago area, by the way?
So we have 10 in the Chicago area, about 450 worldwide, with about 300 of them being stateside.
What's Shake Shack famous for? Why do people go to your restaurants?
Yeah, I mean, I think they come to us for a lot of reasons. I think the best thing about us is the people that work for Shake Shack. So, you know, there's tons of places that you can get great burgers and fries. We are certainly one of them, and our food is amazing. I think what I hope sets us apart is that when people come into a Shake Shack, they feel that the people that are working for us are happy people that are taken care of, and I think that food tastes better when you're in an environment where people are happy.
Is there an order that people place most often?
Yeah, I mean, our signature item is the Shack Burger, which is our smashed cheeseburger with lettuce, tomato, and our signature Shack sauce. That's certainly the most popular item. I like a little bit of spice. My favorite thing is the Smoke Shack, which has bacon and a cherry pepper relish. That's my favorite thing. My girls are kind of partial. We are the Shake Shack. They love our black and white malts are my daughter's favorite thing. So I can't go without getting that.
What are you guys doing for June?
So we have a lot going on right now. I just left our shack in Wrigleyville, where it's Team Appreciation Week across the country. So we're doing things for the entire week to just celebrate our team and show them how much we appreciate them. We also, you mentioned Pride. We've been doing Pride activations for years. The one that we're doing right now, it's the theme is called Sprinkled with Pride. You can't see it, but I'm wearing my Sprinkled with Pride Shake Shack shirt right now. The way that it works is you can add sprinkles to any of our shakes, and we'll donate money towards PFLAG, which is a great organization that supports and educates and advocates for LGBTQ plus people. So it's a really great organization, and we're really happy and proud to partner with them.
Okay, so when I go to Shake Shack, I'm going to get a shake or a malt or whatever, and I'll order it with sprinkles, then you'll make a donation?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and you can get it with any of our shakes. We do have a couple of limited time offering shakes. You can get it with those or any of our classics. We also, we just started doing a non-dairy chocolate shake, another thing that's new for us. So you can do it with that as well.
One last question just about this concept. It just seems to be when businesses decide to make social statements, advocate for any cause, however obviously good or enriching for the community it is, it does seem to come with some measure of peril for those companies. How do you feel about stepping into a space like this? And is it a difficult conversation for you all to have?
It's not a difficult conversation for me. We recognize that there is probably no cause that 100% of the world is going to be behind. For us, what's important, it says it on all of our shirts, we stand for something good. So as long as we're doing something that we believe in, then we are, we're happy to commit to it. We don't make political, we don't have political affiliations, but we do certainly affiliate ourselves with causes that we believe in. So for us, we recognize that not everyone will be behind this, but we're committed to it as the right thing.
Matt Meyer is the Regional Director of Operations at Shake Shack. ShakeShack.com to find the one near you and get those sprinkles. Matt, it's nice to talk to you today. Thanks for joining us.
You too. Thanks so much, Sean. Have a great day.